Hey,
Hey, Jake.
you there, mate?
Yeah, mate. How you
You
doing?
here? Yeah, good, thanks. You're here with Eden and myself.
Oh, beauty. Hey, Eden.
Hey, how are you?
Good, mate. Good. Just feeding some snakes.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
You ready for us?
Yeah, I thought I'd do that while I'm doing that.
Okay, just be ready to be grilled.
Yep. Buckled in.
Buckled in, how good. Well, look. We'll start, what is it, episode 3 of Under Reptiles.
Yep.
Is it radio or podcast?
I don't know, a bit of both.
Bit of both. How good. How the snakes, Eden?
Good.
They're good?
Same old, nothing much has changed since last time.
We only filmed a couple nights ago,
yeah.
So how good.
Pretty similar, nothing much has changed.
Look, so we'll get right into it. We've got a busy episode planned.
Yep, special guest.
Special guest, Peter Street, a good friend.
Not the first time I've been called special.
How's your week been, Pete?
Pretty good. It'd be even better if this guy feeds. Come on, little buddy. Hey, how you doing?
What have you been up to?
Cleaning up animal poo, usual.
Yeah, pretty standard for you, isn't it?
Yeah, I love it. Can't get enough.
Look, Pete, so we're going to jump right in. Do you want to just let the fans know, how do you get into reptiles? I mean, we're going to jump straight into it. We've got a big one, so tell them a little bit about you.
Oh, okay. Well, getting into reptiles, like, that's a long interest. But the keeping snakes, I owe that to a mate of mine from back in primary school and high school. He conned me into handling an olive python. I didn't want to handle it. And then I didn't want to hand it back. I was like, what? Yeah, it nuzzled. Just wanted to get warm under my shirt. And I didn't want to hand it back. It was such a lovely snake.
How old were you there?
I was just after high school, I think. I introduced him to his wife, who's had a kid with, and he introduced me to keeping snakes. So, yeah, we got a pair of stimmies from Snake Ranch back in the day.
Oh, they're those wheat belts.
Oh, I can't remember if they're wheat belts or brooms. Either way, they were stunning animals, and I loved them to pieces. It's just, you know, I had them from a young age, and you know those early, when you're first keeping, you're like getting something to start feeding and keep feeding. Like that suspense and that nervousness, you're like just paying all that attention over them. And now I'm doing that, and I'm, you know, I'm much better at it.
Yeah.
But still, you know, you really do pour your heart into those first few animals that you keep. And I was devastated when I lost them.
That's the one that was in the book, wasn't it?
Yeah. The female, she, when she passed, she turned out to be gravid.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah. And,
well, she passed when she had the eggs in her, did she? Or?
Yeah, it's.
Oh,
yeah. I didn't even know she was gravid. I didn't know until the necropsy. Some mates down in the learning hospital down at Camden, the vet hospital down there. They did that for me as a favour, and I got some photos of the process. And hopefully, the contribution to the book will help people to not have to experience that sort of same heartache. You know, just one of those things.
Yeah.
And the snake I was feeding, it fed a little Windwater baby from last year. So
we'll get on to what you keep these days. This is an ant podcast. So you started with the olive python, you fell in love.
Yeah,
you got your pair of stimmies from Snake Ranch, and then where'd you go from there?
It was a long time until I got any more snakes. It was I ended up getting a few bits and pieces, but it was a fair while after that I started breeding them, and I ended up with, among the ranks of the ones that I bred, some of the first ones I bred were the Windoras from Eden. And
started 1 year, hadn't really bred much before, and then 1 year you just took off with it, didn't you, pretty much?
Yeah, because I started with hatchlings, and I ended up taking so long for them to develop to the size where they could breed, and then trying to figure out how to get the timing right to start them breeding, like when to pair them.
Yeah.
The way it worked, I ended up just leaving them together, and then they, you know, they took care of the rest. But the, for the Windoras, And then I have these, I've got these amazing patternless children's pythons off of Jonathan Howard, the vet.
Crackers.
And some Alastimmies, which I got to breed last year. I've got some really lovely snakes off of a bunch of different mates, and I love the story of, you know, each of those snakes too. You know, it's really awesome to share that with people who've helped set you up with them.
Yeah. So would you say most of what you keep's like locality specific stuff, or
bit of a mix? I've got some really lovely morphs that I'll probably breed off of yourself. I've got the marbleds and T plus and the het there, and the T plus. I'm about to feed him next. He's a gun.
Yeah. Oh, good stuff. Yeah, you've done well with him so far.
Just quickly, we're also live streaming to Facebook. We've got Chloe. We're chatting to Peter Street from B Streets. And then Mitch said, g'day. G'day, Mitch.
G'day.
The Gecko King. But, so, awesome. You've gotten into reptiles. What else do you have other than reptiles, mate? Everyone sees a lot of your photography going around, and you've got quite a few pictures and reptile books.
Yeah.
What's the story there? What attracts you to taking the best pictures of the best pictures?
Well, mostly, like, just, you know, wildlife. Like, I love getting to document stuff that those life cycles or those sort of little complex things that are going on in the background that we don't even realize. And it's really awesome to get a snapshot of something, and then you can connect all those dots. You know, you might see, say, like a praying mantis egg, and it's hatched and there's a wasp hanging around it, and then years later you end up with you know, you realize that wasp actually has a relationship with that praying mantis egg. They get in there somehow, and they eat the baby wasps before they hatch, and they get out of there, and then a while later some of the wasp, the mantises might still end up hatching out of it. But
I know back when I was getting into reptiles, and we added each other on Facebook, you were doing a lot of every sort of animal, like you were talking about insects.
Yeah.
You still do a lot of photography on insects and mammals and reptiles, or is it strictly to reptiles these days?
A lot of that was from bushwalking. I did a lot of bushwalking, and, you know, people, they commonly call it herping and stuff like that now, but I loved seeing all the stuff. You go looking for frogs, you go looking for reptiles, you end up seeing all sorts of other stuff. Just bushwalking, I got to see, speaking of Anthony earlier, we saw a cockatoo chick being eaten by a lace monitor.
You're kidding.
It was the plumpest chick too. It could barely fit it down. It was trying to use a tree to stuff its mouth. Like the, you know, you see all of these, you couldn't expect to see that on any given walk, but you go looking for one thing, you just, you know, playing the odds, you encounter all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, okay.
That T plus from Eden, oh my god, he's smashing food. He just smashed another velvet mouse.
What's that eating now?
He's on fuzzy mice, but I just grabbed a handful of velvets for tonight to feed out everyone.
Yeah, give him a couple, see how he goes.
Yeah, he's smashing.
Beautiful. So you mentioned possibly a bit of herping. Do you get out herping much these days? I know you've been on quite a few trips.
Oh, I've been out of work. I loved being able to, because
I know you're breaking up. You there?
Kind of tethered myself down with the
Yeah, it's, I got you now.
I'm here, mate. You there? Yeah. Yeah. It's the responsibility to the animals that I keep. I can't get away without. You know, I don't want to neglect them. But you know, I've been able to see some parts of the Northern Territory I never expected I'd get to. Simpson Desert. Volunteered with a bunch of different places around Australia, and like I got to see a wild
Brevi Quarter. Little,
you know, little pygmy monitors.
Yeah,
and,
how cool.
Did you ever any other?
Let's see.
Interesting.
Well, that was my next question. Really, what was your craziest experience?
Oh, you mean the pied?
What's looking the story there? Honestly my next question.
The children's?
You've mentioned it to us once or twice. What's the story there? You found a pied children's?
Well, at first all, I'm not convinced. It seemed like an injury, like it healed over.
We'll have to put some photos later.
But,
I would say
it looks a lot like it, doesn't it?
Something going on there.
Yeah, I'll leave this one to rest. I'm just checking out. There's a there's the head spotted from you. I'm going to give that one a rest tonight. It's
cool. So you skim past the Pied Children's pretty quickly. where was it happening?
I just I admire them. I just left them be. I you know, they're a fantastic little snake. It was just camping at one of the sites we were doing the field studies of. We're doing the we're just doing a study of all of the different, so basically vertebrate stuff, like snakes and lizards. And we saw some quail and stuff. Some weird things fell into those pitfall traps. But the, there goes one of the feed items for the yellow children's pythons. He smashed it. Yeah, it was part of that. And I was at the campsite and just, I don't know, when you're first keeping snakes, you know that sense that you could feel the snakes moving around? Like just, they do that really sly slither and it's, you can just barely hear it. And I think I could pick up on that. After we saw the first one, there was a second one right there too. So yeah, beautiful, beautiful little snakes. We just moved them out of the way, got a few photos.
Okay. And just went back now to camping. You're into the breeding side of things. You got, like you said, you got T plus there, you got marbles there. You got head albs there.
Yeah.
How do you feel knowing that you've seen a wild pied knowing what you know now?
Oh, I don't want to think too hard about that. Lots of temptation all the time. Like if you're helping people move snakes on, you see some cracking animals, and you know the most that I'll take is I'll take photographs.
Yeah, that's cool to document. That's where I'm at. Document all your stuff you find along the way. See?
Yeah, that's the way. It's I know that other people would have made different decisions, and that's how we've got to have these amazing things in the hobby. In a lot of cases, not all of them, but that's cool. Just where I'm at.
All right. So, other than your field herping and your photography, and obviously we'll get to the keeping at the end. But what else do you do, Pete?
try to keep out of trouble. I do a bit of.
Well, what's Beach Street? Tell us.
It's a lot of work. It's basically helping people to feed animals that they care for. So if it's their pets or if it's animals in care, produce frozen rats and mice for them. And sometimes I help mates set up with, breeders. Just try to help people to get what they need to into their animals and make them happy and healthy.
Reptile keeping. You can't
drop
snakes without rats and mice.
Well, these guys making
sausages. Right. So how'd you get into breeding?
Interesting. Rodents? Oh, that's a good question. And someone needed a hand getting their colony back up and running.
Had you ever bred them before or just decided to help a mate out and dive head first?
No. Essentially, I ended up, it was the deep end. It was a mixed experience.
Brett Moy saying g'day.
G'day.
A bit of his marbles in this room. sweet. So you keep a fair few rodents these days, Pete. Would you say you've got a large facility or a medium size? What would you say? Just so we can get some context of what you're keeping and breeding and keeping yourself out of trouble with.
It's a bunch. I'm keeping more tubs, but I'm cutting the number down per tub just to make the workload a bit more manageable. So that way it takes longer for them to go through the food and the food hoppers, and it takes longer for them to get the bedding dirtier. But I wouldn't say it's a huge facility, but it's a reasonable size.
So how many sheds you got now? Three or four? Couple? You mean a few?
yeah, good number.
Awesome. So for someone that wants to get into breeding rodents, we're doing an episode on mainly my boss is messaging me when I'm back at work. Wednesday, big fella. Who are we chatting to? We're chatting to Peter Lovely. Street from B Street's Kurt.
There we go.
So, Pete, for someone like, let's just say Eden side of the collection, probably 15, 20 adult ants producing 6 to 8 clutches a year, he wants to get into breeding his own food. How do you help him? Yeah, let's just say breeding.
Just a rough example.
A lot of breeders like eating would be over buying their own rodents. So
I reckon the way to do it, if he's going to set up his own stuff, like I've seen, you know, you guys have a really nice garage, and I'd keep it that way. I wouldn't breed in your garage. I'd find a space, you know. No, well, yeah, but I wouldn't expect him to, because it's unpleasant in the sense that you got to take an animal that you've cared for and it's healthy and everything, and you got to turn it into a not alive animal. And there's ways to do it. But, the past for, you know, the CO2.
Probably just under a year, and I quickly got out of that. I just thought I'll leave it to.
I think everyone's tried breeding rodents. Yeah. To be honest, I've done it.
I had some success with it, but it's I don't know. It gets a little bit if you got snakes to look after as well. I know, like you, Pete, you look after snakes and a big collection of rodents as well. But for me, I didn't find it as easy as you probably do. So.
Yeah, I know. You've got a big heart, mate. You care for the animals that you've got. So it sucks when you've got to, you know, do the other stuff to them as well. So it's, what I'd say is, like, you know, keeping that garage nice, because they build up an aroma in a confined space like a garage attached to your house. You'd really want to ventilate it. Oh, yeah. I'd go somewhere external to your house. So if it was, say, for example, a keeper like Eden's collection, if you could, I'd set up some kind of, you know, well shaded or well insulated outside space, like a nice garden shed, add a whirly bird, an extractor fan. This is a small collection that you're feeding.
Yeah, you know, small collection, 15, 20 adult ants, probably 6 to 8 clutches a year.
Yeah, you could build a homemade rack. You could use lab tubs.
Would you prefer? How do you do your setup? Do you use racks with the slide out tubs, or do you use the URF style?
I use a little. I use lab tubs, mainly because when I started, I had to restart the colony. I needed something that was not going to have escapees. I couldn't afford to have to explain to people why they had mice and rats popping up with funny colors than the wild population. Yeah. I stuck with something that I knew would work and was responsible in that way. But you can have some really great custom rack. If you build your own rack systems, they could save you a bunch of time and a bunch of money. But if you go with the wrong design, you could end up further behind. Because they love chewing. They're really talented at chewing their way out of stuff and chewing the watering system. And the same thing if you've got a garage and you're using that. Wild ones can find their way in over the door and in the sides of the door there. And they could chew. They could introduce parasites. There can be challenges with that. So, if you can have a nice, secure outdoor space that you can ventilate well and is... You got to be really careful with extreme temperatures. So the cold they can deal with better. The heat is legal. So
I think we've had a bit of a malfunction.
We're trying to get the live up, and the live's just.
I think Jake
kicked the bucket.
Bloody iPad's just cactused it.
There we go. Yeah. Oh, on the upside though, my spotted, which feeds every now and then, is absolutely smashing tonight. So that's awesome.
Well, look, the live stream's off, but we'll stick to the podcast. That's what we've been doing lately. So. What size sort of tubs are you keeping them in?
Using the large tubs. And it's good because they're diverse. Like, you know, the large... Yeah, I think you said URS style. And that seems to be the common name for them now.
I know they're the lab style, but URS were the original people to get them through. And that's what kind of people are...
Yeah. I use those because they're suitable for a few mice or a few rats. Or, you know, you can fit more mice in the same space. Comfortably, but I'm kind of going from keeping a trio of rats in that space to keeping just I'm aiming to get down to one pair or maybe one female.
And you've played around with it over the years to kind of fine tune everything, I guess. And
well, the reason would be, like, if I was working on a smaller collection with fewer tubs, I'd keep more per tub.
Yeah,
because cleaning, I'd be able to clean fewer tubs more often.
Yeah, and for micro sure.
More often, but. Now I'm kind of aiming for a sweet spot where it's, you know, kind of working within that, their life cycle that, you know, they'll have a litter up to once a month. And if I can get my timings a bit better again, I could aim to give them a month off in between so that they're able to recuperate a bit more body condition. They're in good nick, but
yeah,
you know, even more, give them a bit of rest.
No, that makes sense for sure.
Yeah, it's sort of about, I'm thinking larger custom tubs that I could keep the females in for their off season and then introduce them to a male for their on. Anyway, I don't have all the answers because as my colony expands, I the best way to do it.
Trial and error, like anything.
Yeah. How I do it on a small scale varies as I grow and I add it onto a larger scale.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, using bottles made sense at a smaller scale. And as I got more, I saved more time by using a dripper system, which I could then use that time and energy in other aspects of their care. So it's...
For sure, definitely.
So someone starting at like Eden, you wouldn't... If he can get a good racking system or make a good racking system that's efficient, you'd suggest that. If not, you'd go to the lab tubs.
If you could build a nice rack, definitely. Like, and I'd suggest, you know, give the automated watering system, because he's not a small collection. Like, that's no, modest, exactly. Really lovely collection. But I'd aim for you do stuff with, you can use like a float valve, and you can have a tap timer, and you can have it take care of most of the watering time and effort that you'd need to put in. You're not scrubbing water bottles, like you can, you know, free up a lot of time to focus on other areas like cleaning and, collecting the feed that you need from that colony. So, yeah, I mean, would you be mainly feeding off mice or rats, Eden?
Personally, mice
you'd be breeding.
Primarily mice, yeah. I probably only got a couple, maybe three adults that will readily take rats.
Yeah.
For the most part, it's mice, and I find as long as all my feed comes from you, so I've been getting like the jumbo mice off you, and they seem to pack the weight on the females, and especially pack it on pretty nicely for them. So I'm happy with the mice for the most part. Obviously, if a female will take a rat coming up to breeding season, I'll give her a couple, but it's just whatever it is, really, whatever they want to take. I know Jake's probably a little bit different in his feeding regimes, but
everyone's got bigger girls, so they eat adult.
Jake and his halflings this year taking adult mice now. Oh my god, they're so...
And I know for you, Pete, like a lot of your big girls, they'll smash.
Medium rats.
Small to medium rats, yeah, no drivers.
Oh, hey, the Windora took, I'm pretty sure, I'll just check her cards. I think she took an XL rat.
Yeah, well, that's just ridiculous, Peter.
It was a longer, slenderer rat.
No, but, not offense. I've fed Macca, the big adult Mac, an extra large, and she smashed it with no problem. And she will eat three to four small, not a problem either.
Yeah, that's just crazy.
It might have been one of the spotteds. I can see here that she's definitely had a couple of medium rats in her time, though. Large rats. Yeah, she's had some large rats as well. 159 gram there. But I'm not trying to push her. She's one of my favorite snakes. The idea of breeding her and losing her, I don't want to push her too hard.
So we'll keep the ant talk for later. But what are you keeping your rodents on? Obviously, what bedding have you settled on?
I'm using wood shavings that are like a byproduct from like somebody who does like woodwork, like you know, like furniture building. So that's
is that stuff too dusty, or it doesn't affect them?
No, it definitely has dust, but that's part of me using. An exhaust fan helps to just keep that from settling. Just ventilates a bit of the dust. It's only very dusty once you first put it in. So it doesn't, if you do that, you know, outside of the place you're keeping them, that dust clears pretty quickly as well. So, you know, basically by the time they're in there, they're not breathing in a lot of dust. And the extractor fan helps just in case a little bit of it does get kicked up. But very soon after that, like they've used a bit of their, you know, their body fluids in there.
Yeah.
It becomes inert. It's not, It's not constantly dusty. But it's good because it's like it's a byproduct that's getting utilized. There's no treated pine or anything in there. It's like untreated pine or hardwood sawdust and wood shavings. So it's, you know, it gets taken to some friends' places. They use it for their incorporate into their compost heap, and it's got high nitrogen, so it's fantastic. You know, they've got fruit trees and stuff they're growing with it.
Mm.
You know, they're rejuvenating their properties because, you know, they don't have to use artificial fertilizers or anything like that. They've got this rich resource, so it's not a problem. It's a resource for them.
Absolutely.
So, and is that just straight wood shavings? You don't use paper or any anything?
It's straight. A bit torn up newspaper for them, but I think the nesting, it was beneficial. They have a mix of like soft sawdust and wood shavings in there, and they can generally collect the wood shavings and use those to make their little nests. But the when I used newspaper, you know, they used to make, you just tear it into strips. So if you've got a small colony, you can do that. But thankfully, because of the way that I've got my setup configured, collectively their body warmth raises their environmental temperature to a comfortable thing. Even through winter, you walk into the shed and it'll be just comfortably warm. You know, so the nest isn't as essential as on a smaller scale where they're using that to regulate their body temperature, because the babies, they don't have fur, they can't trap that heat in.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it's a good consideration.
What temperatures do you like them being at?
Not too hot, not too cold. It's you walk in, feel comfortable. Like that's okay. Kind of, you watch their body language and you'll get a feel for it too. If they're sprawled out and they're laid out flat, you know, you're approaching, you're probably already out of temperature you want to bring them back from. So
yeah,
previous years I've used extractor fans, but this year it was unrelenting. It was something else altogether. The heat and the shade was dangerously hot.
Yeah.
So if someone's starting up and they're experiencing those conditions, you're going to need, you know, you can't just rely on a passive cooling solution like having like a security screen door, which allows airflow 24/7. Like you can keep out wild ones at night and still have airflow. You're not just using like a whirly bird to draw the heat out, and you're not using fans to like actively draw it through. You need something to, you know, like a sprinkler system to spray, or you need an air conditioner. You can't get away. Even in the deepest shade that we had, it was still dangerously hot for them. So
yeah.
That would be my advice to other people. You can dodge a bullet there.
Do you offer them any heating in the middle of winter, or is it strictly...
No, they're really wet. Great at converting food into heat. So if you've got a reasonable, like you might do on a smaller scale, but if you manage it so that, you know, you close up some of that ventilation for part of the, like for the nighttime, and you open it up during the day, then they'll basically, the cumulative heat from their bodies will, you know, if you've got a well-insulated space, you should have a comfortable, you walk in there on a cold night and you'll be comfortably warm. Like you'd want to take your jumper off.
Yeah. So the only sort of messing with temperatures you'll do is to cool them down during winter, during summer.
Yeah. If you've got a reasonably sized colony, it makes sense on a smaller scale, if it's a tricky spot to heat, or if you're in a different climate. But I mean, yeah, the key thing is, the most dangerous thing is the temperatures if they're overheated. In the cooler times, you might be considering keeping additional animals in each of those tubs. So you might improve your harem size. So, you know, the ratio of males and females, you might add a few of each. Depending on your bloodline, the males might not get along, but you might be able to add a few more girls, or you might leave a young in if they're raising their litters together. And they'll just crowd surf this big pile of warm babies. They love it.
So do you suggest keeping your, like in your breeding tubs, do you have like one male to three or four females, or pairs or tree? What do you do?
Depends.
Let's just talk about the lab, like the large lab style tubs. Like what would you keep, rat ratios and mice ratios in there?
Well, it really depends on what you're aiming to produce. If you're looking to produce more of the younger sizes, you might consider keeping a few extra adults in. So you might keep one to three if you're really keen for pinkies and velvets. You might take out the extra pinkies and leave them to raise one litter, and you end up with, and this is talking about the rats, the mice you might consider keeping, you know, eight females, maybe a few more, up to 12. But the more you keep in there, you're going to have to clean more frequently to keep up.
So do you have like a set cleaning regime each week, or is it just you? How do you find that differs between what you've tried over the past, say, couple of years with all the different animals that you've kept, the different ratios? Is it all pretty much the same? Or
as the colonies change shape, I've aimed to keep the number per tub lower, like we're talking about a bit earlier. Like if you can reduce the number per tub, there's some exceptions to this rule. You still want to clean a bit more frequently because of the intersection of like the parasites that can live on the food or in the bedding. If you've got bedding that hasn't, you know, it's not wet with urine or feces, it's still dry. You can still have an issue with these little grain mites. They're a nuisance. They smell lemony, but they're sometimes referred to like as a lemon mite. And you'll notice the odor of once you start cleaning a tub, if they're in there, you'll smell them. They're not necessarily bad for your animals, but I find them just, they don't, I'd really rather they not be in there.
Like anything.
You can break their life cycle by cleaning them frequently enough that they just don't have time to lay their eggs. They're sort of a hidden time bomb. You won't notice them at first, but they'll be there underneath the bedding. And then they'll just emerge en masse. They'll be climbing over everything. They can get them in
wood. Find their way to the tubs, or are they introduced, or
they're
like with bedding?
Yeah, they'll probably come in with the food more than the bedding. Like, probably could come in with the bedding if it comes from a feedlot that keeps both of those things. I don't get them in from my feed. I did get them in from a mate's woodroach colony. He goes, here you go, enjoy. He didn't mention, I asked him about it and he knew that he had them. But I didn't have anywhere to keep them indoors, so I put them in one of my sheds and just to keep them safe and warm overnight, and that was a mistake. That was late, but you know, he gave them to me late. I didn't have a chance to check them over. But yeah, when you get them, it's just a nuisance. But you can get, if you're offering a small colony of the rats or mice, just a bit of food to sort of enrich them, or as a supplement, like, you know, you have some old bread, it could come in a loaf of bread. They'll pop up. They're an agricultural pest, so it's not the end of the world. It's just a nuisance.
So we went a bit off. A ratio you'd happily with the mice, put one male to 12 females, if you were cleaning them enough, and then the female rats you'd happily keep a trio.
Pretty much at the moment, I'm going from two females to one male rat. Going from that to one female to one male, and the next step for that would be looking at different larger tubs. I might keep maybe a dozen female rats to two male rats, and that way, just in case one of the male rats isn't up to you know, he's not getting the job done, at least the other one's there to sort of make sure he's still getting some pregnant females to move on to the maternity tubs.
So then once the rats are pregnant, do you move them out into their own tub?
Moving it onto. So I mean, that way at least I can ensure that there's consistent production across the tubs. Then the other way is so for the mice, at the moment I've been doing 2 to 10, just sort of sneaking that back to 2 to 8, but now it's getting colder. I you know, 2 to 10 is a pretty good ratio for those large URS tubs. You end up with quite a few babies, and you can take some of the pinkies or whatever size you need out of there, and there's just a really good pace being kept. You know, they'll
You seem to have consistent flow coming out of most tubs. So
yeah, well, it's the the mothers are still producing milk for their own young, even if they've been collected as feeders. So you end up with that still being a resource that's being utilized by the other young between the other mothers. So it takes some of the pressure off of the others. They can recover faster. They'll have some more babies, perhaps. But it's just sort of a work in progress, because different stages, you know, it's made different sense to keep things at different numbers in those tubs.
One last thing I want to just touch on quickly before we move on to something else, just how from pinky to adult, how long are you sort of, it's a bit of a random question, but how long are you sort of finding that takes to get from pinky to to adult size.
I'd just estimate about a month from pinky to weaned, and then you just figure out whatever your adult size wants to be. I go for about 20 grams.
So yeah.
You might go a little longer than a month before you wean them, just so that the babies, when they're taken away from the you know, the parents' tub, get a little bit of reserves on them. So,
yeah.
And what do you feed them, Pete? What's the diet? You said a bit of bread, but what else? Oh, no, like, that's obviously a treat, but what's their main diet consist of?
Oh, I haven't fed my guys bread in ages. Like, I was doing that to supplement things, you know, the different stages. I've collected fresh fruit and vegetables from, you know, different grocery shops that give away their seconds. And, you know, that was a fantastic thing. You see, you know, the parent rodents make a nest of strawberries for their young. Like, they're really devoted parents. They're amazing.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. Oh, but I've been using Biomare cubes, which is a...
Okay.
You know,
that's what I used to use back in the day when I was breeding them for that short amount of time.
I think that's pretty standard, the Biomare. Yeah. So you just use the Biomare pellet and then supplement with a couple of bits of random food occasionally?
Well, I'm reluctant to add in just random bits of enrichment food now, based off of, I don't want to introduce something that could, you know, like some kind of pest that could culture in there. And
yeah, I
want to be able to go back to the other way. It's just, I just want to make sure that they're safe from those pests. But I'm just thinking of the other, there's something. So yeah, I haven't fed them bread in quite a long time. And bread's something you've got to be really careful with, because nutritionally it's kind of just, it's a filler. It's not nutritionally itself.
Yeah, I get
fantastic.
You.
So it's, there was something else that I think that you mentioned that I was going to answer as well, but we sort of got two questions in one there. I forgot the other one.
Yeah, no, it was the last question on the breeding the rodents was, we've touched on a bit of everything now, but some possible problems that can come up with breeding rats. I know that when I used to breed them, cannibalism was something. How do you go about that?
Good question. I, across the board, most of the time, I don't have any problems with that. Like, it's opportunistic. Yep. Just say, for example, one happens to, you know, fall off its perch before its time. The others will eat it up, which is, you know, they'll start to by the time I find it. And then, you know, at the end of the day, that's kind of beneficial because they're removing something that would go bad.
Okay, but how do you stop that in the first place?
Well, they're not really killing them to cause that in that case. In the case of where they would kill them, you know, like be aggressive, I haven't had a lot of issues with aggression because you steer away from it. You either don't choose them as breeders or they volunteer themselves to be stock. You know, that's part of what you're doing anyway. So you just want to ensure that they're all, you know, getting along well, and you steer away from aggression.
So if they're an aggressive, say, male that was eating the babies, you just knock him on the head and get a new male?
Well, yeah, I've got CO2 and I'm able to do that pretty easily. But it's, haven't really had an issue. I think the main issue you would have, like if you're talking about where do you find those sorts of issues with babies going missing, you kind of avoid those by, you don't mix tubs that have got a female that's about to give birth or has just given birth or, you know, has young. You just try to keep those guys as they are until those rats have weaned. When you introduce a new male or an extra male, or, you know, basically just avoid, you know, even changing females, additional females into a tub, just as a precaution. Generally, you can get away with this stuff, but if you do it, then you're probably going to see a bit more in the way of babies being eaten. It's generally the only time I'll see aggression out of the females is if I have, you know, if you're touching them and they've just given birth, they're really sort of protective. You can get away with it a lot of the time, but sometimes you won't. But if you introduce male mice, you know, from tubs that are adults, like if you introduce them as weans, they might get along okay. But if you take the jumbo mice and you put them all in together, I had a bloodline that I steered away from just because they really didn't get along. My other bloodline, you know, they're a bit more flexible, but males are a bit more defensive.
Cool.
How good. And what age do you start and stop breeding your rats and mice?
It varies. If I've got a line that seems to be going strong, I'll just try to expand that out a bit. I don't keep a stopwatch for them. I just keep an eye on their body condition. And if they don't seem to have produced a litter, then, you know, that sort of the end of the line for them. So the, going back to the sort of the changing over systems of the mice, I've just recently gone to a 1-to-1 ratio on one of my sheds. And it's really interesting seeing the diversity of what they've produced, because having kept multiple mice, female mice per tub, I could never say for sure. I could guess based off of the coloured rats who it was as a parent, but because of the coats and the colours. But it's really neat to be able to see definitely who, which female produced that litter, and, you know, which male may have sired it. So it's, you know, the...
So it's once the litter size starts to diminish, once they start to drop, you then consider...
Yeah, well, I've got redundancy enough there that I've got breeders that don't have to produce, but you aim for that. You aim to have most of them producing most of the time. And if they're not producing, then you can afford to sort of give someone else an opportunity to be a breeder. You know, that you need to produce adults for stock. So it's, you know...
Yeah, I get you.
Yeah. You're sort of getting messages in the background there.
Oh, no, it's not good, but anyway.
So, no, it's all good.
I think that kind of covers the breeding the rodents.
Yeah.
But obviously, we're here to talk about Antaresia. What ants do you keep?
All right, so I've got, in front of me, I've got a rack where I've got my reds.
Your red stimmy line?
My red stimmies, and... I got them from Chris Corton, from Chris's Constrictors. I've got my Alice Stimmies, which came from Jonathan Howard. I mentioned them earlier.
Yep.
It was Cracking Windora. And I've got 2018's clutch of babies. I held back a bunch. And I've got a bunch of young downstairs still that I'm feeding.
You got some really nice reduced Windoras out of that first clutch, I remember. Oh.
They were nice. I held back a few, but now I've got one that's come out that's really light coloured, and that one I'd love to consider pairing up with these reds. The red cross Windoras are just...
There was a heap of variation in that, in both those clutches, actually. I remember.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think the Windora male has pattern reduction, but he's got that lightness about him too, some of the young he throws. And then to have the red, like this, I'm going to take that one out of the shelf. It's, you hit that with the flash on the camera, and just you get it under the light, and it's just glowing. This thing's ridiculous.
Yeah, for sure.
So you keep a lot of locality stuff. What morphs do you keep?
Morphs. So we'll start with, we've got the T-plus off of Eden.
The T-plus stimmy, the SR line?
Yeah.
What else
morph-wise, you got? Good question. I'm just running through the shelves. So I've got not a lot in the way of morphs. It is mostly locality or just...
You've got some marbles there.
Yeah, I've got the marbles. I've got a absolutely lovely set of them last year off Eden.
Yep.
The boys smashing, and the girls, she was a twin, and she's smashing as well.
She was tiny when she first came out, Jake. You would have remembered her from when she had... She was ridiculously small. I think one ended up passing, didn't it, Pete?
That was devastating because it was feeding and everything. Like, it got it over the line.
Yeah.
Oop.
You didn't even... Was it us? When I was around at your place last time and I saw that their one twin, I was blown away by how much size she's put on and just how much she's bounced back.
Just a sec, guys. Wow.
You there? It's breaking up a bit.
Did I do it again?
Breaking up a bit, mate.
Can you go?
It's like, get you guys hit me. It's a bit robot-y.
I'll just check because it seems
There we go. That's come back good now, I think.
Am I still in the chat or is it just... Yeah.
You're still in the chat, so that's anything that's going to put you on the naughty list this year.
Oh, no, it's all good. I just think I bumped it while I was looking at the marble. Sorry, guys.
So, do you only keep Antaresia?
I'm sort of steering back away from other stuff. Like, I've got a lovely pair of Ackies. I've got a couple of blue tongues. I've got a Ruffy. That thing's an absolute champion at helping me get rid of big food items. But I was just looking at the records for the Het Marble, seeing as we're talking about how small it was. So the other one was just under 3 grams. This one's 3.26 grams when it started off on the 3rd of the 1st, 19.
For those that don't know, Peter likes to keep records of every little detail, and he writes them all down.
I still try. I keep the feeds, but I love to do. I want to plot out the growth rate. Well, you asked me a question the other night. Remember, well, the other day, you were saying how much food does it take for a snake to get to an adult? Yeah. And I could give you a
couple of the answers
worth of data in a second. Like, oh, this is good fun.
Graphs and charts. That's how Pete talks.
That's it. Oh, was that rats and charts?
Yeah, graphs and charts.
Rats and charts. Gotcha.
Look, so you keep mainly ants. You said you're scaling down everything else. Where would you like to see the ants in another 5 years' time? What are your projects? Where do you want to see them go? And just what are some personal goals of yours with the Antresia?
I kind of like just stuffing around and learning, by surprise. Because as much as I could pretend I know what's happening, there's so much cool stuff that just happens. Like the reds, I couldn't have picked that. Now, like, with more experience, I might be able to. But
yeah, tell us a little bit about that. Those patternless stimmies you got out this year, and how a couple of those came out completely different to the rest of them.
Well, I can't explain it. I just love them. It's they're just ridiculous. Like, because the amazing thing isn't just what they are. It's you hold them up next to the ones that they're kind of related to, and you end up with more questions than answers that you can figure out at the time. Like, Jake's been hinting he wants to play with some as well. Like, what would you
pick? I want to chuck it to our reduced pattern / patternless yellow stimuli.
That'd be cool. That'd be pretty interesting.
Reduced pattern yellow to a reduced pattern red.
Oh, see, I've got one of the Windoras has got really light colors, and I'd love to see what they come up with, but I kind of feel like I want to produce, if I have a pair of these guys, because you sexed them for me, and like I haven't trusted anyone to sex my snakes besides you yet. So,
yeah.
I potentially have here a pair, because it looks like one was a boy. And
yeah, that's right. You look like you had the really nice one was a girl. You had a not as nice boy, and then you had another girl that wasn't on the same level, but was also there.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, be interesting to see, because I just want to maybe expand the bloodline out a bit and then get my mates to sort of, we just sort of compete with each other and see what we can produce.
We'll beat you.
But I think, for trying, we're all winners, though. That's the thing.
That's right, at the end of the day.
Yeah. So you don't have any personal goals, like trying to go get that pie back or anything?
Well, we're on lockdown right now, mate.
Look. Pete, I think that sums up a lot of what we've got. We've got a one last part which we're going to add in.
Oh, God.
I call it a quick 10, but I don't think it's going to be quick. A couple of them will be. It's just yes or no answers. Oh, sure. So, question number one, where were you born?
Townsville.
Townsville. You're Queenslander.
Apparently, it's the most violent place on earth.
That explains you. So, do you go for New South Wales or Queensland in the NRL, the origin?
Which team was Marty on?
I think he's a Queenslander. What age did you start keeping reptiles?
I've had them around the house, but keeping them like on license and stuff, like that was until later in life. That was
What time did you get your first reptile, dodgy or not?
No, I didn't keep them, like we just had them around.
How old are you?
I would have been after high school, so I would have been, early 2000s.
Yeah.
Cool. How many reptiles do you currently keep?
Couple.
You know the answer.
I don't know. I think that it's actually like better to not know the answer, just because I don't think the number defines the quality.
Yeah, I get you, but you're lucky enough.
You're so focused on saying like this number, but not give a heck about them.
Yeah, it just went weird.
That's me.
Yeah, but
that's my normal voice is a robot.
I mean, all I was saying is you didn't have a missus, so you can keep track of how many reptiles you have without getting in trouble.
Oh yeah, maybe that's part of the problem.
any takers? We'll be matchmakers. That'll be the next episode.
Tinder. best. Up line, does this rag smell like chloroform?
this is a good one, Pete. How many reptile books have your photos in them? So how many different books?
Oh, a couple. I've got... this is meant to be a yes or no question. I don't know. Yes?
On a
row. Okay, let's go. More than two?
Yeah. More than five? Two. Yeah.
Okay. And more than 10?
Probably.
Okay, sweet. So we're between 10 and 15?
I don't bullshit you. Like, I mean, we're counting magazines as well.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, it would be over 15.
Oh, how good. I've got over 20?
I don't want to bullshit you. Probably.
Between 15 and 20.
That's more than most people would
check. Far out. I haven't got a picture in yet, so yeah, it's doing good.
I got a couple in Scales and Tails back in the day illustrating Nikki Noga's articles, and I got a bunch of full-size, full-page images in Australian Geographic.
Oh,
you take some crazy shots.
You got a couple in that entry.
Yeah. And some of the other books on, venomous snakes have been released recently. Hal Cogger's book on reptiles and amphibians of Australia, that was an absolute surprise. Like, because the Coggers have been like, the Bible of reptiles and stuff like that. Be included in it to have a frog and a reptile photo in there, just
mind-blowing. Yeah, I'm gonna grab that to look at pics. And what's one of your latest ones you got pictures in? Would that be the Antaresia book?
Oh, yeah, they're in there.
You got that's in there?
More recent, there's a few more recent ones released by Australian Geographic.
Yeah,
so I have copies of them here. I'll just grab the title. So Scott and Ty Eper, the Snakes of Australia. So they've given me a copy of that. There's a few other little ones too. I have to find them. I should have been a bit better prepared.
No, but, right. Another it's a quick 10.
Jake threw you under the bus.
The other one that stands out though was the book on keeping Australian lizards by Mike Swan. He did like the general reptile keeping book, and he did a great book on pythons, which I loved when I was choosing my stimmies.
Yeah.
But it was awesome to be included in his lizard book, which is absolutely, it's a fat book, but it's got some really great stuff in there.
Yeah, cool.
I referred to that for my Ackies.
Sweet. Well, we've got a couple of personal questions. Would you prefer peanut butter or Vegemite?
Field traps and then the Vegemite. Probably I'll go the Vegemite.
Just I'm with you on that one.
Aussie.
I'm with you on that one.
Do you prefer grabbing a block of chocolate or a packet of lollies?
Chocolate.
What's your favorite food?
Oh,
that's a tough one.
Oh, it is. I love making pasta, but that's not my favorite food.
We love eating. I love eating pizza and nachos and all that good stuff. What's yours? You could pick anything to eat right now other than
it's a very personal question. Just thinking there's some really yummy stuff that you get at the Lizero Thai Funk. Those guys have
that's some of the best Pad Thai I've had in my life from there.
We're gonna make the Thai and Lizero famous now.
Here we go.
I work right next door to it.
Yeah, the chili basil tofu there is amazing. But the mee grob, that stuff, when I was eating meat, that stuff was awesome. They do a bunch of really awesome stuff. But I used to love the Massaman curry.
Oh, I can't beat that.
Yeah, not their one. They cook theirs a bit different to my favorite way of having it. But the other meals they do, the other dishes they do there is pretty awesome.
No, they've got a good little business going there.
Perfect. Well, we've got two more questions. If we finish this interview, you walk outside tomorrow morning and you find a lottery ticket, you cash it in and you win 10 mil. What are you going to do?
Probably buy some more rat tubs. They're not very bright.
10 mil.
No, but honestly, would you set up a snake facility? Would you set up a rat? What would you do? Would you go traveling?
Not really an option right now, traveling. It's tempting, though. You know, if you got that much money, probably get a different set of rules. just thinking, what would I do? So far out of my things that I can contemplate as being a thing, there's stuff that, you know, I'd probably buy a phone that works a bit better. Probably. But I probably
wouldn't be the iPhone 4.
I've got an iPhone 6 that replaces one, because I had a really sweet phone. I had the iPhone 6 Plus, like a new one. This one's secondhand. Okay. I dropped the old new phone into the Wyong River. I was going looking for platypuses. They didn't even get in the canoe yet and heard a bloomp. Oh, geez. 3 meters deep. Do not go looking for stuff if it falls in there. Just
the other really answer you, besides getting a new phone, what would you do? It's 10 mil.
I'd just buy one more Vision Rack than you've got.
Just one.
I'd send you photos and Snapchat all day. That would be what I'd do.
You'd need probably about 10 to even catch up, so.
Yeah, at least. Maybe I'll buy two more than you've got.
Just
the same. You know, Jake would be running out the next day just to try and get two more to stay on top.
It's about feeling them. That's what really matters.
Quality, not quantity.
Yeah, but Pete keeps everything back.
I'm tempted to. Hey, it's such a weird feeling. But when you find a good home for one of the snakes,
it
feels bad. Like, you just, it's a good feeling. Like, I haven't sold many snakes in my life, but I sold a hatchling.
Yeah.
And they done their homework, and it felt pretty special. Like, you know, I could tell that snake was, they were going to learn a lot with it. It just felt so good.
Yeah, cool. What was that snake? Just out of curiosity, what was that?
Oh, it was a yellow children. So it had 9 established feeds. I was going to feed it again that night, but yeah, I didn't want it to be in the belly. They fed it today, and it smashed food.
Oh, beautiful. That's
10 unassisted feeds. That seems like a good benchmark.
Yep.
And full feeding history went with it. And they, you know, had the hatch date on there and a few other bits and pieces, but, you know, they put a lot of effort into setting it up nicely, and it felt bloody good.
Good stuff, mate. And lastly, the last of the quick 10, how many pairings do you have this season?
Oh, hoping for at least a dozen, but if there's some that, there might be more than that, but if they don't look like they're going to be 100%, I'm thinking you're just taking it easy and just focus on a couple of really good clutches.
Yep.
That's true.
A couple less than us.
Yeah. Well, see, now I have to do more.
You don't have enough snakes anymore.
How many have you got?
I think, well,
between, so coming into this season, we had about 60 planned out. Oh, and then with this coronavirus stuff, we've kind of scaled back to only what we kind of need and want and what we've got people asking us for, coronavirus or not. So with that being said, probably 35, 40.
Nice. Okay.
There's a couple of girls being rested. But then, we always rest a couple of girls each year, but then obviously there's a couple more being rested now.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
we think 35, 40 have been pretty manageable. And like you said, if a couple don't go, then it is what it is. We can't.
So, I just got to buy 20 more breeders this year and just check out the classifier.
Better hurry up.
No pressure.
20 breeders? You'd be able to set up a whole new quarantine room then, wouldn't you?
Oh. I'll have to get rid of the bed.
Yeah, good. Well, we covered a bit of breeding rats and breeding mice. What have you got for sale, Pete, just in case someone, obviously with all the rules on Facebook, this is a good platform if people are listening. What have you got for sale?
Got much to go
on? I might have a few more after I get them sexed.
Oh, don't say that. You're having a dig at me now.
I'm always having a dig at you.
I've been in isolation, mate. I can't come over and sex hatches. I don't want to risk you.
So considerate, but also come get over it.
It's all right. I'll know the answer tomorrow. We'll be sweet. We'll be able to get out there and sex some hatchies.
Yep, that sounds fun.
What do you think you'll have by a couple of max? What are you thinking you might have?
Oh, look, I think the yellows are pretty safe to move on because they're just really awesome feeders.
There's some yellow children's.
Good. Yeah, yellow children's. Okay. They're really good handlers. They came from Beck Colden. She did a great job with the parents of those, and she set me up with them as breeders. So they had a phenomenal clutch, 17 eggs.
Oh, and wow.
A good, yeah, for me, that was my excitement. Like, you've beaten me on that, I'm sure. But
yeah, mate,
I don't know, have you?
Yeah, 22.
22. Yeah, last season?
Oh, I've had it two seasons in a row, 22.
Okay.
Nice.
So,
where do they come from?
Max. My biggest aunt was 22 or 21 by a broom.
Yeah.
But, that's my biggest stimmy. Children's I don't go big on, and I haven't had a lot of experience with.
How did they go for size? Were they a good size egg as well?
Yeah, huge eggs. Oh, you know what? It's funny. I actually find that, like, snakes that have huge eggs, if you've got, like, a big girl, she'll have a big clutch, but she'll have average size eggs. Then you have some big girls that have, like, a clutch of 10, but the eggs will be double the size.
Your white belt girl last year, was she laid bloody the biggest ant eggs I've ever seen?
Yeah, there was 12 there. But I found out who ended up getting that reduced pattern broom off me. He commented on one of the posts, Chris Hollett. So he bred her last year, my reduced pattern broom, and he said between 18 and 20 off the top of his head.
Okay.
So, and he didn't pump or anything, but yeah, right. That's the broom line. But what do you got for sale, Eden?
Oh,
anything? Just because.
Yeah, I've got not too much left here. I've got probably, I'll just say to be safe, two female T plus. Visual stimmies from the Snake Ranch line.
How much are you selling them for?
Oh,
we can talk prices. Facebook isn't watching right now.
I'd be happy to let
it out, mate.
The ones I have left, I did sell some of the nicer ones for a little bit more. These ones I'd probably be happy to let go for $750.
Yep. We've done a lot of them for $800, but yeah, come in the back end, coronavirus, $750.
Yeah. And I've probably got one established het left to go, plus one I'm going to keep back. So obviously that one's not for sale. I like to keep at least one back for every clutch.
Yep.
And then, yeah, a few marbles that should be ready, all going well in the next month or so. That it's been a little bit finicky to get going. But
Pete's off feeding snakes.
You can't help it.
So what have I got? I've got a couple of het marbles there.
Yep.
I'm doing them on a coronavirus special for $170.
Yep.
They're cool little snakes. They're from the white line. I've also got a couple of, same as Eden, Het T Plus Stimmies, 100% Hets from the Snake Ranch line. I've also got a...
What are you selling those at, the Het T Plus?
So the Het T Pluses I'm selling for $250, $300. There's a couple of different colours through them. So
okay.
The nice ones got for $300, but there's one or two there that... they're still nice, but they're just not showing the same potential, like bright color and that.
Yeah.
Sure. I've also got a blonde 100% head albino Mac female. Bought her up for sale, $600. I've got a normal het female here, 100% head out for $550. And then a couple of males, and I think there's two albs left that aren't quite eating perfectly on their own, but as soon as they're eating, they'll be up for sale.
Yeah.
They're female, they'll probably be 2.7.
Yep.
Well, that's what I've sold a lot for, 2.7, 2.8.
Yep.
I know it's a little bit more than others, but what you get with quality.
The quality is there.
How's everything else, Pete? You seen anything to take note of this week? Anything cool that the viewers should hear? The fiends?
What have I told you something that I've forgotten to mention? Or?
No, I'm just...
Oh, okay.
The fans asked for some quality content, so we give it to them.
Nothing comes to mind. It's been pretty quiet. There we go. One of the hatchos shed. Patternless. Oh my god!
Don't forget to write it down.
One of my patternlesses hasn't lost its pattern yet.
What? So it's not a patternless.
Patternless. It's pairing, so
nah, there's a bit to that still. But you know what, actually, calling about genetics, I know patternless is more of a new gene to work with. I was having a little chat with Brett Moyle on the comments today, and he put note to that if you put a tarball to a double head, you're going to get 1/4 of the clutch being double head, you're going to get 1/4 of the clutch being visual marbles, het T plus, you're going to get 1/4 being T plus that are het marbles, and you get 1/4 tarballs.
Yeah,
you couldn't get better odds unless you put obviously tarble to tarble.
Yeah,
It's a T plus.
Even still, that's giving you the nice variation through everything and getting a bit of everything.
Honestly, and it's all 100% head.
Yeah, can't go wrong.
I was saying how double visual animals and double head animals are the key to pushing forward. Obviously, Pete that we're talking to is working with a lot of polygenic reduced pattern localities and stuff, and you and I are more focusing on morphs. But, I mean, you chuck a double visual to say something that Pete's working with, and then you're going to end up having some crazy red chucked into the genes.
Well, that's right. Imagine putting one of, I think Pete's probably got this lined up for one of his future pairings, but putting the T plus male that he's got over something like the reduced pattern stimmy that he produced last season. Like,
what if he beat you? You want a pattern?
I know.
What if he beats you?
Game on.
Giddy up.
But yeah, like imagine the heads that would come from that, you're bound to get at least a couple of really cracking reduced heads. And then you put those back together and it's just, like I said in I think the first episode, my end goal would be to have like almost patternless T plus that are just fluoro orange. So yeah.
Where are you at with your breeding season, Pete? Have you finished feeds or are you cooling or are you still feeding?
A bit slack. I've still been feeding. I haven't fed anything for a few days, but I'm kind of keen to just get a little bit more into them.
Well, you know what? We've got a cold week this week. I think the max of heating is 23 during the day, so the nights are getting nice and low.
Mm.
So something to think about for all you New South Wales breeders that are keeping air. Oh, you know what? This season's a lot different for me. I'm trying to crack a trio of olives, and I'm like, oh, yep, you know, finished feeding, but I don't realise that olives... kind of why you're reducing the night time temperatures, you're also still feeding them.
Yeah.
It's only a bit different, but a lot of my females now are switched off. They're done for feeds, they're waiting for the clear out, so it should be good.
Yeah.
Should be a fun year ahead.
A big one. Biggest one yet, I think.
So, Pete.
Fun.
Pete, for everyone listening, where can they find you?
On Facebook.
Obviously, in your bedroom, feeding snakes 24/7. But where else can they find you?
They can find me on Facebook. If they track me down on there, you can message us on that, or you got my mobile number.
So that's Peter Street on Facebook.
Yeah.
What pages do you run?
I've got a Beast Treats Facebook page. I've got a Beast Treats website, which is beasttreats.com.au.
Okay.
The pages, like I've got the. Been working on a resource to help people identify local wildlife as well, like snakes and frogs and other things. I've got some of the frog recordings on there. So that's our wildlife, OURwildlife.com.au.
Yeah, good.
And
then those books, we're gonna get you to do some research, and over the next few days, we'll post some links for them. If anyone wants anything. And then if anyone wants any rats or mice to look at expanding their collection or starting breeding, you can either message us or Pete, and we'll put you in contact with Pete and be able to get you some good livestock, because Pete's obviously been refining for years his bloodlines.
It's all top quality stuff.
But you done, Pete? You happy? You good?
Yeah, happy. I just found one of my patternlesses had shed. And I'm hoping he's fed right up until...
And he's happy. Seriously.
Oh, it's simple pleasure, mate. When they're so good. Birthday, August.
All right, everyone in August, let's all pitch in. We'll get Pete a T-plus patternless from Faye.
Yes.
The best line, we'll get Pete a T-plus patternless. What do you say?
I'm down for that.
That after patternless? The iPhone. We'll get him a new iPhone.
Oh, we'll have to see if Faye's willing to sell us one first.
Oh, nice.
Nah, too easy, mate. Thanks so much for doing that tonight. I know you're a busy man, so we appreciate it. Like I said, if anyone's got any questions, feel free to give us a PM or give us a call. We'll be able to help you out.
Beautiful.
Too easy, guys. Like and share.
Cheers, Pete.
Thanks, mate. See ya.
Bye. All right, how it is.